Hey everybody, thanks for listening to the show. Real quick up top, Simon Coronel has been working for about a year on this kind of secret puzzle project. He's alluded to it a few times on the podcast. It's finally out now as a Kickstarter. It's the Magic Puzzle Company. If you just search Magic Puzzles on Kickstarter, it'll pop right up. It's co-created by two of the founders from Cards Against Humanity, a very popular game, and they're already like way past their pledged goal. So if anybody wants one of these magic puzzles, I would suggest backing it now before they run out. And if you guys like the podcast, you can be a Patreon subscriber for a buck or two a month. Helps keep the podcast going. Thanks for everybody who listens, and enjoy the episode.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Hey everybody, welcome to Two Magicians, One Mic. My name is Nick Paul, that's Simon Coronel, and today we have Shin Lim, who's doing arts and crafts and interviewing us at the same time.
Yes, I am. I'm practically knitting. This is the magician's form of that.
Anything you have to do to keep sane is fine with me.
That's right.
How have you been holding up? How's everything going over there?
Good. Yeah. I mean, I think I'm pretty, I have to consider myself like lucky, because like I can't imagine like people in New York, New Jersey, because Vegas here is not so, it's not so bad. There's only like, I think, how many big? Like 4,000 infected. I haven't checked recently, but just not that many infected. So we're good compared to like the East Coast in the US.
And you've got space too, which is nice.
Yeah. Everyone's very spaced out in Vegas. And I think people are taking it really seriously here too. So that's good. Like the social distancing, everything. Yeah.
What was it like for you career-wise? Because you were, is that right? You were doing your show in Vegas when this all hit?
Was it a rapid stop?
Was it gradual?
Oh, very much rapid. I mean, I anticipated for it to happen like around February. I was already telling the guys in Vegas, I was like, hey, I really do think that this is all going to close down soon. Like, we need to be prepared to shut our show down. My promoter was like, well, I hope it doesn't happen, and then but then it did happen. So I think the hotels for sure kind of needing to come back in order to make some money, I think. But shows for sure won't be back normally until the vaccine's found, in my opinion. At least big shows like in Vegas, because when you're putting 1,300 people in the theater, that's not social distancing. And the seats are so close together, you know, like that's not gonna happen. So like big shows like Cirque du Soleil and stuff like that I don't think will be back to a complete normalcy until the vaccine's found.
Sure.
Yeah, maybe a while. And so what have you been doing in the meantime? Yeah. What's the plan? I mean, it sounds like you're okay to ride this out for a bit.
Yeah. I'm just kind of keeping sane. I think like everyone else, I've been keeping in touch with a lot of family members, a lot of friends, doing a lot of Skypes. We've had a pretty regular schedule, me and my wife Casey, recently, because it was after AGT. It was pretty much, our schedules were just a mess for 2 years straight. I don't think we had a day off. Everything was always kind of hectic, so we've been relaxing a lot, actually. It's kind of an unnerving relax, because there's so many things going on right now, so it's not exactly like a holiday, but I'm trying to make it feel like it. I'm trying to look at it on the bright side, trying to be like, okay, like this is my time to relax and just kind of take a break, I guess, from performing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of performers have done that, and I think the first couple of weeks it was, oh cool, okay, this is like a vacation for all of us, and now it's starting to creep in for me too, of going, just the actualization of how long this could go on for.
Yeah. It was really eye-opening to know that the industry I'm in is very much not essential.
Yep.
It is that, yeah. That's a great way of putting it. Just a great slap into the face to anybody, yeah. anybody who's ever had an ego. I'm unstoppable, yeah. baby.
Yeah. Nah, man, you're not essential. Go away.
Yeah.
Yeah. We are very optional.
We've talked about this a bit, Simon and I, on the podcast. Are we, in the event of the zombie apocalypse, how helpful would magicians be?
Oh, my God.
And I think we're kind of learning that right now.
Yeah. We're very much not helpful. Well, we're going to have to pick up a different skill set, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of the skills really translate, though. Planning, engineering, designing, crafting, right? You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Adapt those threading skills to basket weaving
I'll go into wardrobe. I'll be the wardrobe person for everyone.
Under special skills, it's just going to say perception abilities, the ability to notice things.
Look, man, we're going to need bite-proof fabrics. But like Shin, for you, this is an interesting time because one of the memes, sort of meme formats going around right now, is magicians who for the last several years have been shitting on magic that either only works for cameras and projectors or Instagram online are suddenly doing a total reversal, going, oh shit, okay, this is all the magic we have now.
You
did really well from that trend of projecting, you know, your acts are projector based mostly.
Sure. I mean, I agree though with people that shit on that stuff. I'm very self-aware that camera Zoom magic or Skype magic is, can I swear on this show? Shit?
You can swear. Okay, all great. The goddamn great. Much you
yeah,
want.
I mean, it is. It really is. It doesn't work in real life. I'm very, very aware that the stuff I do on Instagram just simply does not work in real life. I think they're two completely different mediums. I call it social media magic, and then versus the real life, real world performances. Like, if you take something that's an amazing routine from the real world, like, I don't know, Bill and Kiwi or just something that really works, and you put it to social media, it's just not going to work. It's not the same thing.
Yeah.
Whereas if you do something so stupid, like the snap change or whatever, it gets all of a sudden millions of views on social media. It's a totally different medium. Like I think there's only certain tricks for certain mediums, but like, you just got to know like what to pick, and how to utilize it. I'm very strong against using like CGI in Zoom or Skype. I don't think that's very ethical as magicians. But yes, you doing like, you know, doing other types of tricks just so you can take advantage of that singular lens, or vice versa. You know, doing a trick that has a lot of audience participation or has a lot of laughter involvement in a live show, to specifically pick a trick for that is also considered like taking advantage of that situation.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, I think the distinction of them as two totally separate mediums is a really good way of putting it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm finding doing a lot of work with John Armstrong is that the more interactive, the better for a Zoom type show. Because if it's not interactive, what's the difference? Why are they not watching Netflix right now?
Right. That's right. Yeah, that's what I've noticed as well. Actually, the things I've been doing, like the performances with, I recently did one with Jeremy Griffith. It was actually a lot of more mentalism type stuff over Skype rather than visual stuff, because visual things, if you're doing a live performance over Zoom, like it just doesn't. Well, then what's the point? You might as well just go record it on Instagram and post on Instagram.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need the interactive part is really important with like mentalism and stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, that goes back to some of like the Dunninger radio magic from like the 1940s and stuff. Those concepts really still hold, kind of making a comeback now. We're finding some really old stuff is now new and relevant again, which is
fascinating. I know Colin has been doing a lot of mentalism on Zoom, and I've yet to see one of his shows, but from the sounds of it, it looks pretty cool. It's like doing a lot of cool like mentalism, like trying to change methods from the live performance to put it into Zoom and still be able to do the same thing without like obviously the classic methods like center tear and stuff like that. Obviously you can't do center tear anymore you know, on Zoom, so you got to figure out different methods, but it's really cool to see the adaptation of like mentalists and stuff like that.
One of the things that we kind of all have in common is the House of Magic, rest in peace, in Macau. That's where I met you, and you know, that's where you met your lovely wife Casey, who we knew and worked with. What it's just kind of like a reoccurring theme on the show. Even when we try not to, it still shows its face. Anything that you kind of took with that? Because you did, you know, probably, I feel like double the amount of performances we did over there.
Yeah, I did a ton of shows there. I still, to this day, me and Casey always look at pictures from Macau, and we always like reminisce about like how much fun we had here and how much fun we had there. I love like Asian food, Asian cuisine. So Macau to me was like, it was pretty nice. It was nice because I was at the time I was living in Boston, and Boston doesn't have very much like authentic good Asian cuisine. So when I went to Macau, it was really nice. It was like a good excuse to get good food, good Asian food there. I really enjoyed like going to the Taipa site, like the old Taipa. Mm-hmm. You guys got known there, and then even on Macau side as well. It was nice to like go around there. The strip was obviously, it's a strip, you know, the same as Vegas. It gets boring. Like it's not, you know, it's like fake. It's not, I don't know. Everything was fake. The walls were fake. it wasn't exactly a good place to hang out.
You didn't enjoy the world's largest Venetian? Layers upon layers of stores.
Casey very much enjoyed those.
Yeah, my wife did too. We were there literally every other day. I understand.
Yeah, and Casey, they don't have Victoria's Secret apparently in Australia, so she went crazy in Venetian there because they had a big Victoria's Secret, so she was very...
Do you feel inappropriate being in a Victoria's Secret? Because I always feel inappropriate. I feel like I'm in someone's closet.
No, I think nowadays it's fine because I see tons of guys there now. So we all just kind of look at each other. We're like, yep.
Yeah, we get it. Yeah. When you're the only dude, though, it gets very uncomfortable very quickly.
Yeah, because then all the other ladies are just like looking at you strange. And I'm like, hey, I got a wife. My wife is somewhere. I don't know where she is.
I didn't put these drawers of underwear here.
Yeah. I mean, I know I'm just standing alone by myself, but I promise you something.
Sorry, that's a digression. I figured that you could relate to that challenge in life.
Oh, totally. Totally. Macau was fun. It was fun. The performances were tough. Doing how many was it? It was like six a day, right?
Eight
on the weekends. That the weekends were tough, especially when we were sick. When I was sick, when I got sick, I had like some sort of bronchitis cough. It was so hard to do eight shows while coughing and like going through that. So that was tough.
Yeah. I had food poisoning at one point as well.
That was rough. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh, that must
But be yeah, tough. When you're on that schedule, have you had any tough times like that in Vegas? Like just tough shows to get through because of how you're doing with everything else?
Yeah. Recently, I mean, I don't want to say anything, but me and my entire crew in November got really sick, and possibly was it the coronavirus? Who knows? But we got really, really sick, and it spread like this. It's crazy. Yeah. My friend from LA, he got it first, and we were all trying our best to like really stay away from him, and then it didn't work, and all of a sudden, the entire crew got sick. Performing through that was pretty tough because it was like, you know, we were coughing and it was like a 2-hour show where I had to talk a lot. Because in Macau it was fine, I didn't have to talk. Mm-hmm. It was total silence for me, and it was only 15 minutes at a time, so I could, after I finished the 15 minutes, I can go off stage and cough and then come back. So like for Vegas, it's just straight up 2 hours I'm just on there. So it was hard to get through that. I think it's hardest when you're not feeling well under the weather and then trying to perform and smile.
Hey, before Vegas, have you done many like 2-hour straight performances?
Never. Mm-mm. No.
I don't think many people have, like, besides that, other than like a 45 or an hour long set, having a 2-hour, you don't have that many opportunities to do it like a 2-hour long show.
Never had one. And that's why when I got the opportunity, I was like, I don't know if I can do this, guys. But I had to kind of wing it.
How are you approaching it? What's the show structure? Like, how do you structure that show?
I kind of structured it like The Illusionist, sort of. So it's a very much interweave show between me and Colin, and we just go back to back from each side because a lot of my stuff takes reset. So and Colin's great for that. So he just comes in anytime I need to do a specific moment of reset, and then I come in afterwards. And at the same time, there's also a very nice pace of it, because you just kind of never get bored of the show. Because I feel like if you watch 30 minutes of me just on stage, it gets very repetitive of just cards. I think people will get bored. So it's nice and refreshing to get someone who's a totally contrasting, but in a good way, like personality. He's funny, very light, nothing serious. And so I think people really liked it. And hopefully when everything comes back to normal, we're making some changes to the show. So I think it's going to be good.
Yeah, because you're known very much for this sort of, you know, hyper-visual, routined card magic. Mm-hmm. Is there, I mean, one of the things I remember, because we first met back in Indianapolis at Indie Magic Fest, like, what, 5 years ago or something?
Yep.
And one of the stories...
Before, it was before House of Magic, yeah.
Oh, yeah, way back. And I remember you telling the story of, like, how you kind of came up with your first act way back. Is that a thing you've talked about publicly or are willing to tell here? I loved how unexpected it was. Given, you know, you've risen to, you're easily one of the most famous magicians on the planet right now. Sure. And I just love the origin story of where it all came from. Obviously, you don't have to.
Yeah. I mean, Nick already knows, right? Yes. I don't know if we need to talk about publicly, but. Yeah, I mean, I hang out with my friends.
I can edit any of this out. Just let me know. Yeah,
we hang out at night, and then we just, talk a lot, and then we come up with cool ideas. That's pretty much how things are created here. We don't have a very set schedule for anything. It's a very kind of laid back. I mean, it's laid back at to a certain point, and then when it comes time for the actual. When we need to do it, we tend to work very last minute. That's what I've noticed. That's a very common common theme I've noticed.
A lot of magicians I know same way.
Yeah, we leave it to the last minute, and somehow it helps. I don't know.
That's all that Magic for Humans was the entire third season. Just last minute. Okay, we're changing this. I'm like, well, that's not in the script at all.
but it turned out to be amazing.
But it's what's necessary most of the time. Yeah.
That was so good. It's probably one of the best magic shows on Netflix, I think, right?
Oh yeah, they did a great job. I'm just the man who helps duct tape things. That's how I call it.
Hey, duct tape is great. That and gaff tape,
you know,
and double side tape,
very versatile.
Comes in very, very handy. Very handy.
How have things? I mean, obviously, your first Foolist clip went viral, did very well, and then your second Foolist did well, and then AGT. You know, I don't think. A lot of people go on there hoping to do well, and yours, I feel like, was one of the best case scenarios. How did you feel like, obviously it changed everything, but in what different ways did it change things that maybe you didn't expect?
I expected like my life to change in a certain way, not in like a monetary or location wise anything like that. I thought I was gonna have to like have less time with my family just because of how busy things were gonna be, or my close friends, stuff like that, but surprisingly no, I've kept a lot of that. I've kept a lot of my family. I mean, not yes, I've disowned
the ones
my family.
You like. Yeah.
I've actually grown closer to my mom, and I've been closer to my family, closer to the friends who are close to me. I've kept them even closer because it matters even more now. It's tough at times because it's very stressful. Obviously, you know, things can kind of go out of hand sometimes when there's so much on the line and there's a lot of money involved on the line, but at the same time, like not much has changed. No. I mean, besides me moving to Vegas and stuff, like all that other stuff, you know, that's all changed. Like I consider like outside things, but like inner me and the people close to me have all been still very much the same.
One of the things I'm always curious about is, I mean, again, last time we hung out was way before your meteoric rise to fame. Were you surprised at all by like how well your style and everything got received? Or was that something you kind of planned and saw coming?
No, I was very much surprised at how the little things people were either noticing or they were catching on to, or they were like, oh, you did this on purpose, blah, 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 blah. Cause, you know. And then I was like, oh, okay, wow. People actually kind of saw magic how I wanted people to see it. I didn't expect them to catch on that quickly. So
what kinds of things jumped out to you particularly?
It was just the idea of me calling myself like a sleight of hand. That was the first one. I said, I'm a sleight of hand artist. And for some reason, it just caught on like completely. AGT caught on to it. Every single news article that was interviewing me at the time, even till now, they say, so you don't call yourself a magician. You're saying it's sleight of hand. So, I mean, and that's something I've always told people in general. I say every single thing, and even in the show in Vegas, I say every single thing you're going to see is sleight of hand. It's not magic. I'm not trying to say that what I'm performing is real by any means. It's just a lot like me playing the piano and stuff like that. And I tend to make that kind of comparison with piano and magic in the show in terms of like a story based type of thing. But I was very surprised that people caught onto it and started repeating pretty much what I was saying.
That's interesting because when we chatted with Teller about what 2 or 3 weeks ago, he mentioned that too. It was his their business manager or somebody's at the time when they moved to Broadway specifically said, we are not putting magician or magic show. It's just going to be Penn and Teller. And that helped out immensely. Something about not having the phrase magician really changes the way people perceive what you're doing.
Oh, very interesting. Okay.
It makes sense, right? There are so many, there are plenty of negative stereotypes in the public eye about that, even though many of them are no longer justified. Many of them still are in the way people perceive it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, I think it's kind of weird, I guess, for that to be the case. I don't know why. Like, I think maybe people, it's like a statement. I guess that's why like the illusionist did so well, you know, the manipulator.
Ooh. Yeah, right.
the escape artist. Even though like at the end of the day, it's kind of cheesy if you think about it.
Yeah.
Like in general.
It's
like,
just it's, dancing it's so around cheesy, it. It's but, weird. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny how that seems to be one of the consistent things is just avoid the word magic and you do better. I mean, Penn and Teller, Shin, you know, a lot of the illusionists. It wasn't the magicians.
The magicians. That one. You know what? I really liked that show, though. It was a good show. Yeah. The magicians.
Oh, yeah.
The one in New Zealand. It was a really, really good show. I'm surprised we didn't go for a second tour run because I thought it did well. I thought it was a really well put together show. It had really good dynamics.
I think sometimes there's just like no rhyme or reason to it as well. It could just be a matter of circumstances and timing. And,
True.
But
that's a funny, I was talking with some of the people behind Fool Us and we were talking about just, different success stories. And like, again, no one knows how things are going to go. You just cannot predict anything realistically. Yeah. You can get a good hunch.
That's true.
And they were talking about, they had no idea how well the show was going to do. And you came up, Shin, as one of the obvious success stories. And the conclusion was like, what can you learn from what happened with Shin Lim? And the only thing you can really learn is, that happened. Because how do you know? You can't replicate it. Yeah. You couldn't have planned it. You definitely didn't plan it.
Yeah. No. I planned the axe. That's as far as I went. I planned. I was like, okay, I want to do my best on this act that I really like, and I love performing. I find it fun every time I perform it because it feels epic. And that was my goal. I was like, I want it to be epic. That's what I told them when I was talking to the producers. I was like, make sure you bump that music up so that I can feel it. And that was it. That was the criteria. I didn't even expect to fool them. I wasn't even like going into it. I was like, I just hope they like it. That's all.
Yeah.
Like, I just hope they're entertained. Probably won't fool them. Like, I didn't have any expectations. So, and then it just blew up like crazy. And when even the filming day of it, I didn't expect it to blow up, after we finished shooting. It was only when I uploaded it on my channel, and then all of a sudden actually, the funny thing is I uploaded it on my channel the next day, it only had like 5,000 views. And so I was like, oh, okay, I guess this is just performing regularly like my other videos. But then it was the third day or the fourth day, all of a sudden it just went to 2 million all of a sudden. So it was insane. I'd never seen a video perform like that on my channel at the time. And still haven't. unfortunately, no video is ever going to perform that well.
Is there any rhyme or reason to something going viral in your experience, or is it just chaos? I mean, other than it obviously being a good performance, actually, but I feel like everything you put out is a good performance.
Well, other than you know, smoke, so, right? That's the one real tip.
Yeah, that well, that one, I think at the time vaping was getting big. And so that might have
that been was yeah, that was a solid visual that still sticks in my head from the screenshot of you smoke mm-hmm. coming out of your mouth. And people right. I think right. cause them to click on that and go, oh, what that's right. a magic what is show? This?
What is that? Yep, yeah, that's you're totally right. You're totally right. I mean, I've had some stuff go like somewhat viral on like TikTok or Instagram. Those platforms are a little bit easier to know what's gonna do well, I think. Especially TikTok, now that I come think of it. Seems... Kind of, when, sometimes you kind of know, like, okay, I think this might do sure. kind of well, especially within the first hour. You're able to tell, like, okay, this one for sure is 100% going to do well because they have a really good refresh rate. But, yeah, I mean, on YouTube and just in general, like, whether something will do well, even on TV, I don't know. I'm so unfamiliar with that world. I don't know much about TV, to be honest. I mean, the most I've done is AGT.
I find that refreshingly honest and self-aware. There's a lot of people who think they know, and I think they're all full of shit, personally. Oh. I don't think anyone really knows. Mean,
I think TV is so hard to get into, too. Like, because I've done my rounds of, like, pitching and stuff like that. And, like, I'm just like, wow, this is really complicated stuff. Like, needing to get funding for a movie and all this stuff and having to work around that. And then if they fund you, like, you got to listen to their ideas. I was like, huh, this is, seems like a lot of work for just asking for money. Like,
yeah, that's,
I don't know.
That's
a, I don't know. To me, it just thing. Sounds all very, sounds like it's, it just, it goes around. Like there's so many complicated routes. I'm like, no wonder why, like, sometimes I'm like, I don't know. Sometimes YouTube or even podcasts like this just feel more like down to earth than something that's overproduced on the NBC or whatever.
Yeah, it's funny how YouTube or podcasting is kind of becoming that medium of people seeking out more long form things or more honest mm-hmm. things. Yeah, because stuff on TV, it is weird going back, because I mean, I think we all are watching streaming platforms these days, and it's weird. Yeah. Like, we just watched the live Parks and Rec the other day, and it was the first time I'd watched network TV in a very long time. And just the advertising and the way it's cut together, it just seems so dumbed down. You know, it's weird.
Yeah.
It's not treating the audience like they're intelligent to me. I don't know.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah,
this is why I'll never be on America's Got Talent, Jim.
yeah.
They know I know that.
That's true. Because you have to dumb it down. And it's like, they want big, we want it to be great. And that was the one thing I told going to AGT. I said to them, I said, I'm not going to fucking cry. I'm not going to have a sob story.
Well, that's the thing. That's what I'm not trying to shit on AGT in any way, because that's what I really enjoyed about your performances, is that it seems like everybody who does well has had a relative get hit by a bus or something. In your case, I'm like, no shit.
Not to say that was bad. It is bad, but like.
But the thing, using that as a crutch to go forward, it seems like you were just there on talent, which is the whole point of the show.
I said, can we please just focus on what I'm doing and what I'm performing, even with the show itself? So when you go through the rounds, right, they tend to give you things. They tend to like make they fluff you up. They I don't know. They
I've been through
the
pre-rounds. I've done the early producer interviews, but I've never gotten past that. So I've had my foot in the door. So
I'm sure they've told you, though. They were like, okay, we're gonna do this. We're gonna make it big. Big is the word they use a lot, you know. And it's not just AGT. I mean, there's every producer. I feel like
you learn a lot about it's a producer's game. Yeah,
it's big, and so. That was my main thing for AGT. I said, no. I just need my table. Please give me the music that I want. And yes, have a nice background on the LED wall, whatever. But like, that's all I need. And that's all we're going to focus on. I don't want to be overproduced. That was my main thing going in. Because I had seen all the other acts before. And to be honest, it's so distracting.
Sure.
Like all the dancing girls or whatever, you know, like the sparkle, not the sparkle, they use the same fucking cannon for
I don't know how much Ruben told, because I know you guys go way back about working. Him and I, Dom, and we really struggled with that, about trying to pull it back from that overproduction, and we failed at the end.
It's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of pressure from the producers. I get it.
Yeah.
You know, they make it seem like it's life or death if you don't do it.
Yeah.
They're like, you're gonna die if you don't make it big. And I'm like, that's not. This is just a TV show. It's fine.
Yeah, it's a TV show.
I get it. It's live. You know, sure, like a lot of people watching it. But like, it's not the end of the world if we don't have this this massive tank of water that we're gonna drown in. Like, you know, like, and especially like, I think another thing is they also don't understand magic. I think now they have a better understanding of it, but for sure before they did not. They thought magicians could just do anything.
Yeah.
And so they were like, oh, well, we have this new set for you to do. Can you do it right now? Can you escape from it? And, you know, the guy's a close-up magician. He's not an escape artist. You know, so you're kind of pushed to do things that you aren't familiar with, I think, a lot of times, which can result in not so good performances.
Yeah, I think another benefit knowledge... to the label sleight of hand artist.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think having the knowledge, knowing that the producer is ultimately looking out for themselves and to up their own career, and just knowing that and being aware of that and the honesty of that, I think it certainly seems like something you, you know, in a weird way, took advantage of and said, no, okay, we need to stick to my guns. And I think that's pretty great.
Yeah. Got to thank my mom too on that. And she literally, she was like, if you, so it was funny. They wanted me to perform Dream Act first, before anything. And then my mom was like, no, he's not performing Dream Act. He's doing that last. He's not going to do his best act first.
Yeah.
And then they're like, no, you got to do it. You got to do this or else we're not going to let you be on AGT. And then she was like, fine. We'll go to ABC's the world's greatest. At the time, they have the show called The World's Greatest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then she was just like, yep, he'll go on that one instead then if you don't want to do Dream Act. And then they're like, oh, wait, no, it's okay. Okay, we can. So, like, it's that's another thing. Like, they make you, like, blow your load the first round.
It's classic.
That's what I've noticed.
It's fucking classic street market negotiation 101. Be willing to walk away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, you really have to be willing to say
I think they're so used in that show of people being, oh, yeah, oh, I want to be on TV. It's like they're anticipating that's what where people are coming from. So that's amazing that
they take advantage of the big production company behind them.
Sure.
But at the end of the day, you're just a competitor. You know, you're not their judge. You know, you're just their competitor. You can do whatever you want. You're their content, so you have the free choice to do whatever act you want. It's, you know, whatever they're saying is literally just an option or a suggestion. They make it seem like it's the end of the world, but it's not. Mm-hmm. It is still a suggestion.
That's a great point. Yeah,
valuable thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point for like people who are also interested in doing AGT. And don't get me wrong, like I know that all this sounds very scary and everything, but like. AGT is actually still a really good opportunity for a lot of like up and coming younger like artists who maybe want to just give TV a shot or who want to see what the TV world is like. You know, it's still a really good opportunity, I think. Despite all of this, the stress that comes with it, you still learn a lot, even if you don't do well or do well. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, it's still an amazing opportunity for people, and you just have. I think 100%. Knowing what you're getting into. Makes it okay.
That's so important. That's right. You have to know what you're getting into, and you have to know that you're getting into this world of. It's a very hungry world. All the producers are actually, believe it or not, working against each other. It's a competition of the producers themselves. The producers are also wanting their contestant to win because then they'll get they'll do better later. So you have to understand that you're getting into this world of competition. It's a big competition.
Yeah, it was an interesting balance that, because you're right, they really, even still, really don't understand magic, but they're about like at least 20% of the time they were right. I'd say about 20-30% of the time. Like they were usually wrong about the magic things, but they weren't always wrong about everything. So it was a complex.
So what do you mean by wrong? Like they were.
Oh, as in like, you know, the magic. No, as in like how to block it. Like, oh yeah, put this over here, and then if you put that there, it telegraphs the method. It's not deceptive. Like they just don't get it. But then sometimes in production things, I would say
95%.
Oh yeah, I mean about the magic, but about some of the other things like staging and stuff, sometimes they were really right. And it's so tricky to navigate. Okay. Like, when do you listen? Yeah. When do you not listen? When do you stand your ground? When do you give a bit?
I never listened. I don't think.
Well, I don't think they out. Actually.
Yeah, you know, like you know it. Why? And this is my point. I think you don't. I think no one knows you better than yourself, really. Yeah. Or people that are close to you, like your family. I always show it to Casey. I always show my ex to my mom. It's funny, when I'm performing stuff, I don't actually show it to normal people, like to lay people. I don't test things out. I always test things out for people that are really close to me. And then when I perform it for the first time, that's when I perform it for the real world. And that's it. That's the act. I don't like test things out and change it. I mean, maybe I change like little things here and there, but like the main core act, I always show it to my family and friends. So I really do believe that the producers, for not just AGT, I'm talking for everything, they actually don't know at all anything about the act. Whatever they say doesn't actually work at all, in my opinion.
I love it.
In any way, shape, or form, you yourself need to know it. And then you listen to them, obviously, you say yes, okay. And then you have to explain to them why it needs to be different. Because 99, I think 20% is a very gracious percentage. I think it's 99% of the time, you know what it needs to be like. So you say, okay, no. Great. First you have to say, great, that's a great thought. But and then you go, okay, so here's the thing. Like, this is why it doesn't work. It needs to be like this because, and you have to explain to them why it doesn't work, because they're not magicians. They don't know anything about your act. And even if they were magicians, maybe they do know a little bit about magic. You still need to explain to them exactly how your act works, exactly why this needs to be shot at this specific angle and needs to come up here at this specific time, because they're not going to know it. They're simply just not going to know it. And even if the director was a magician, he's still not going to know it until you explain the act to them. That's just what makes magicians so unique, because our acts are so unique to us that no one else knows it better than us, and no one will be able to ever film it the way we want it to, unless we genuinely describe it each and every single little step. Like, oh, here you shoot at the wide angle, here you shoot at the close up, here you pan up, pan down.
Did you have final editing approval or anything?
No.
Close to that?
No, of course
not. I would assume not, but any ability to look at the footage?
Nope. No. Especially not the live rounds, because obviously that stuff is live. But this is how, because like for my live performances, when I go to like even Macau or whatever, you know, any place I go to, especially for the single day performances where it's just one show and that's it, and then I leave, so in and out. Camera is so important for those shows. The angles are so important for those shows. So I'm so used to always explaining every single little bit to the guy that's handling all the production and stuff like that. And so it was pretty much normal when I went to ADT. I was doing the same thing. I was like, okay, here you got to do this. Here you got to do this. That way, everything's all set. So if there were any mistakes that were to happen, it would be either the cameraman's fault or something like that, where he didn't zoom in enough. But other than that, I wouldn't have to worry too much about the editing, because I would always make sure the angles are always at the right spot at the right time for the act.
One of the things I was thinking back to something you said earlier about on Fool Us, you want it to be epic. And one of the things that really struck me when we first met was how different your sort of stage/performance persona is from your actual personality. You have this very dramatic, sort of demigod-like, epic kind of demeanor. Was that a deliberate choice? Yeah. Was that just something you improvised day?
It comes from my love of movies, really.
Oh, yeah? How so?
Yeah, I really love movies in general. If I wasn't a magician, I'd be a movie guy, like either a filmmaker or whatever, cinematographer, anything to do with movies, editing. I love everything about movies. because I like editing, the editing aspect. I love piecing things together. I'm not talking about like CGI. I don't know how to do any of that stuff. I'm talking like being able to piece things that we've shot together in such a cohesive timeline that is so cool. Tells a story, you know? And so I love that aspect of it. I love camera. I love the actual recording of footage and getting like a nice crisp image, good lighting, stuff like that. I love everything about that type of thing. And my favorite movies tend to be epic movies, Lord of the Rings, Inception, you know, even Joker. And now like the newer movies coming out are quite amazing. So it's a lot of that type of atmosphere is kind of what I wanted to portray in Magic, I guess, because of that influence from movies. Also music. I also kind of perform the same way when I'm playing the piano. I have that same type of epic feel. But I think that also comes from movies too. Mm.
That's super interesting.
My love for movies started since really young. I was like I think 7 or 8, I started watching like The Matrix.
Oh yeah.
Even though it's like rated R, my parents were like, whatever, it's a good movie.
I still The Matrix is still one of my favorite movies ever. It's a very cliche thing, but it's creative. Such a fucking great piece creative. Of work.
The first one, man, let me tell you.
Yeah.
I watched it recently and I'm like, wow, this was made in 1999, right?
Yeah,
1999.
And it still holds up.
Yeah.
Totally holds up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there is like that's it's so important to me to have influences outside of Magic and being influenced by great movies. I mean, obviously Copperfield has talked about that, and you know, he's talked about being influenced by music, and you know, if he was a better singer, he would be a singer, but he's like, I'm good at Magic. So that's what I do.
Interesting.
So that's I don't know. It's so great to be able to pull from so many different aspects. I'm sure for you are you a classically trained pianist? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah. It was classical for, even in university, it was classical piano. Now I don't do that anymore because of the carpal tunnel. So I play modern pieces that are really easy. But yeah, I used to do classical.
And that's what you went to school for as well? Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yep.
When did the transition to Magic full-time happen?
After Foolus.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it was after Foolus. Yeah, I hadn't performed that much, to be honest, before that. I mean, Magic was like the only thing I had because of the carpal tunnel, and then I had to withdraw from piano for a bit. But I wasn't really performing that much, to be honest. Like, I did a tour in China with Mike Miller. That was pretty major. And then after that, I did a ton of conventions, Magic conventions, and a ton of other like festivals or galas in Italy and Spain and stuff like that. But I hadn't really actually done like, hadn't even done like the Magic Castle, you know, like I hadn't like consistently performed. I've always just created, performed for my parents, performed for my close friends, and did competition and stuff like that, but never anything like Vegas here.
Yeah, I really like hearing that you perform stuff for people you know. I'm kind of the same way. I hate trying stuff out and you know seeing if it works. I going to your wife or you know a relative or somebody who knows you. If you get a reaction out of them, you know it works.
That's right.
And
you know
that is going to be fine for strangers.
Something. Right, because they know who you are, right? They know they know when you're the most comfortable. They also know when you're being awkward and stuff like that. So they like, if they're approving of something, it means so much more than when just a regular audience is like, oh, that was great. You did a great job. You know, that to me, that means nothing.
Yeah.
Now, when they say, oh, I think this part was kind of weird. That means a lot because then I'm like, okay, I really got to fix that.
Sure. Yeah.
But yeah, praise from a regular audience to me, to be honest, doesn't do it. Not that it doesn't do anything. Obviously, I'm very grateful, but it just in terms of being improving, it's not going to do anything for that.
Yeah, it's a higher standard when it's someone who actually knows you and gets it. It's a higher bar to have to aim for.
Yes.
I kind of see that with guys who really only primarily perform at the Castle, and you see the difference that they're used to that, you know, response of people who dressed up and, you know, made a night out to come see a Magic show as opposed to performing for somebody who's seen you 1,000 times, who knows you. It's a very different situation.
That's very true. And the people at the castle are usually drunk, right?
sometimes, you know, after, you know, 7:30, you never know.
The later show.
Yeah.
At least the times I've been there, they always seem drunk.
Yes. Yeah, you can get away with some stuff you couldn't normally get away with.
Yeah, I think there's so much value in a lot of ways to kind of having an arduous kind of practice development environment, like making it tougher. If you're performing for easy crowds, mm-hmm. you stay soft. And for me, when I first got into magic,
I'm so, 100%.
For me, I first got into magic back at university, I was basically performing for other engineering students and psychology students. And like that mix is like some of the toughest, most analytical problem solving. They're going to bust you on everything and tell you.
Mm-hmm. And engineers, engineers are tough.
If I get a request for a corporate party that's engineers or scientists, I pass it to somebody like Simon. I'm like, nope, I'm not doing that.
I'm like, I was born in this darkness. Let's go.
they're tough, man. I did a show for MIT once, and it was hard.
Oh my god.
I feel like they knew what I was doing. I was like, oh man, these guys are smart people. But
how is it? Yeah. I mean, going the opposite of the spectrum. What's it like performing for Vegas audiences? I feel like that could be all over the place.
It's all over the place. It's tourist. Yeah. It's like performing in Florida. Everyone there is a tourist. Yeah.
I did 3 years at Disney World as a magician, so I'm well aware of that clientele.
Yeah. Either they're coming in with freaking shorts, or you know, like
that's my thing. Just dress up. Just put on a pair of pants. Yeah. To see
sometimes,
the show.
Sometimes they put on nice clothes, but usually it's shorts
and flip flops.
And guys with like hairy flip flop, hairy legs, just like, and they have a beer, and they're like, oh yeah, let's go watch this match. Sarah, get over here. Let's watch this magic show.
I got free tickets.
I got a discount ticket. Come on, let's go.
Can you feel it when it's a discount ticket crowd? Can you feel the difference? I'm not saying that you need to. I feel like you guys are selling your tickets are selling just fine, but
no. I think Colin has a better feel of that. So for me, my show is a lot like the Macau show. It's a very like when it's me on stage, it's a very like focused. So everything kind of draws in like this, whereas Colin, when he comes in, all of a sudden it's very open and he comes into the audience. So for me, I can't really tell actually, because a lot of my magic is so it's like a piano piece. Like,
yeah, I was gonna say that's what your stuff reminds me of as like a classical piece of music. There's a beginning and an end. Yeah,
right. And then like even the people that come on stage, they're not necessarily involved. I do feel kind of bad because all I get them to do is just sign the card or do this. Like I'm ordering them around. I'm not actually like communicating with them.
Well, in that situation though, like you need, they are just vindication for what you're doing. Cause for anybody using augmented reality, because that's the thing somebody mentioned to me. I do a Rubik's Cube match and someone goes, oh, you just use a computer screen to just match that. And I had never even thought that people would think it's AI. That's just insane.
But you know what? It's getting really advanced now.
Yeah, totally.
It's getting really, really advanced.
We have magic phones. Like, that's like doing stuff with cards. I think that's why it works, is it's analog and people, you can't program a deck of cards yet.
And you know what? You know what's even crazier? There's been, I don't know, I mean, I'm not going to say the name of this guy, but it's an Asian magician. And he does, uses the table is a screen, is a legit screen.
Wow.
Yeah.
A LED screen, and I'm like, wow, dude, way to just ruin it for all of us.
Yeah,
like, way to fucking CGI.
I had a drunk guy at the castle. This is in February. He goes, or maybe it was August, and he goes, Rubik's Cube solve, I think, behind my back or whatever I was doing at the time. And he goes, that's just one of those cubes that solves itself. Like half jokingly, but half serious. And I called him out. I'm like, what'd you say, sir? He's like, yeah, it just solves itself. I go, that is absurd. He's like, you have a piano upstairs that plays itself. Why wouldn't that be able? And I go, oh, that's a very good point, sir.
That's a very good point.
You have got me there.
And you know what? Like between like the robots that can solve Rubik's Cubes and like the LED Bluetooth connected Rubik's Cubes, like we're basically there. Like virtually, like I'd be amazed if we could actually make a Rubik's Cube that solves itself right now with current technology.
Yeah. Well, there was one that was going around, but I think it was Bubkis. It was being marketed like about a year or so ago.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if we could actually do, if someone's already done that somewhere, at least in a lab or
now we got to be like, all right, can you examine this?
Yeah, check it, disassemble it.
You disassemble, make sure there's no.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's gonna be. Yeah, and then like with digital, like with playing cards, you know, color changes and stuff. People are like, oh, it's just like an augmented reality digital thing changing now because it exists. Yeah. So it is kind of scary, to be honest. But yeah. Having that validation, I guess, of people coming up and checking. That's so important.
Well, it's also, I mean, it makes me think about what David Blaine figured out back in the late 90s. Like, focusing on the reaction of the person validates that it's real.
That's right.
Like, that's so important.
He's so smart.
Yeah, everybody that was mad that he was doing a coin bite or something didn't understand. Like, no, he's flipping it completely in a way nobody else has done that before.
Yeah,
it's not about the coin bite. It's not about
the magic. He was innovating with the medium, not the methods and the effects.
And
actually, Shin, something you said a few minutes ago made me think that just on what both of you are saying about how a lot of your routines are actually really similar to kind of piano pieces. Is that a conscious connection in your mind, or was that just something?
No, it's because I'm really bad at performing. Like, I'm really bad at, like,
that's going to be the title of this episode. Two Magicians with Mike, Shin Lim. I'm really bad at performing.
Like, no, it's true. I'm not very good at, like, on the spot. Like, I'm not as quick on my feet as, like, you guys probably, or even, like, Colin, you know? Like, I just can't do that. Like, I'm not very, like, I've never done table hopping, so I don't think I have that kind of experience of, like,
God bless you.
Like, being, like having to, like really,
just react. It's just not improv. You're reacting. That's all improvisation is you're reacting to what's being thrown at you.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I'm really bad at that. Even with music, I was bad at that too.
Oh, interesting.
I could never do jazz.
Oh, wow.
For as long as my teacher wanted, he wanted to teach me jazz, and I just couldn't. I don't know if it's my brain, if it's just the way it works. I just can't. My brain just doesn't work that way. It works.
It probably goes back to the movie thing, is like the beginning, middle, and end. That's what you're comparing it to. And same with the music piece, you're following the notes. So
it's a very linear, but the way my brain works is very linear. So here's a really good example. If you told me to go and perform my dream act, right, in the middle of it, so go to this section of the dream act, can you start from there? Yeah. I wouldn't be able to.
I'm the same.
I have to start from the beginning.
Nothing I do is amazing or as detailed as what you do. But for me, my multiplying bottles is maybe the only comparison. And if you told me to start in the middle, couldn't do it. And I've done it, you know, mm-hmm. we did it 300 times in Macau. So I totally get that.
I couldn't. Yeah, I just can't. And I think my brain works like that. And so that's why I structure my acts like that. Even like my close up. So I have a section in the show where I walk around the audience. And I go through and I do like really close up stuff. Even those bits, I'm not actually really communicating with the audience. It's a very much so a linear type of trick. It has a set path. There's really not much that can disrupt it except for jokes. So I'll say a joke if it needs one, or if there's a moment where I can, I'll use this line. That's as far as I'll go. But in terms of the magic, it has to be linear, or else my brain will just.
That's funny.
Crazy.
It's that,
and I won't be able.
It's
to
that Houdan quote. You know, we're just actors pretending to be magicians. Or pretending to be conjurers, I think is the actual quote. And in your case, you're a musician pretending to be a conjurer. And I think that's the part of your brain you're using.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. As we've held you hostage here for quite some time, we always like to end with going, you know, asking anything that's ever gone like chaotically wrong in the act, or I guess with cards, it's a little bit easier to kind of to cover stuff, but for a lot of what you do,
no,
there's
really.
A beginning, middle, and end. So.
It's been bad. It's been real bad, plenty of times. So with my stuff, as you guys probably know, it's with music, a background soundtrack. So with that background soundtrack, I don't have any cues. So it's from beginning to the end, and that's it. So there's no guy back there being like pause, continue. So it's usually about 6 to 7 minutes. So my ambitious card routine is about 7 minutes. And about 3 minutes into the routine, I genuinely lost the girl's card. I have no idea where it went. Like I believe it was a top change, and then I had to do the twirl change like that at one point. I did the twirl change, and her card was supposed to appear, and it wasn't her card. It was just a random card. I'm like, oh fuck! So I'm like, okay, maybe I taught change to the third card. And I checked the third card. It wasn't the card. I checked to the fourth card. I'm like, it's not there. And I didn't want to spread the rest of the deck because the rest of the deck was a gimmick. It was the clear cards at that point. You know, Joshua Jays, Phoenix. Not Phoenix.
Whatever it is. Yeah. The individual Omni deck.
Yeah, the Omni clear cards. Yeah. So I didn't want to spread the deck. So, and I checked the bottom. Like, no, it's not there. And I checked my Servant. I'm like, maybe I dropped the card in my Servant. So, and this is in Broadway for the Illusionist. And so the people, like, you just see me go to the back of my table. And I'm just like trying to look for this card. And I'm like, it's not there. I'm like, and the music's already well past 4 minutes now, going into 5 minutes. And no one stopped it because they can't. The guy doesn't know where, you know, what's going on. So I was literally like, cut it. Cut the entire end. And I took the girl. I was like, okay, bye.
You're safe now. And the epic music's still playing.
So then they cut the music and I took the mic and I'm like, well, guys, clearly I can't do real magic. Day.
The comedy stylings of Shin Lim, everybody.
It was like golf claps, and they're like, wow, what's going on?
Wow.
People were so confused because they didn't know it was the end. They didn't know I messed up.
Yeah, that's the thing. Most people don't, in
most magic tricks, unless the prediction is blatantly wrong, people don't know that you've messed up.
They had no idea. They were like, what was he doing? I don't understand. So that was,
I like the show, but the avant-garde piece in the middle with the cards, I didn't really dig it.
I don't know if it was trying to be artistic about it, or I don't know.
It's amazing, isn't it, that I've had moments like that that were just complete cataclysmic, you know, like failures. We all have.
Right.
And it's amazing how many of the audience just don't believe you. Like, it's I don't know whether that is almost kind of heartwarming, how much faith they have that we can't actually screw up.
I think they start laughing or something, you know, like uneasily. They're like, ha, ha, ha. But, like, they don't know that we actually genuinely messed up.
Yeah. You know, and that we're just honestly acknowledging it.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
But I think maybe it's part of, you know, some people that believe magic is, you know, that they have superpowers. So they're like, well, how can he mess up? It's a magic trick. He's doing magic, you know? So maybe it's that. I don't know. It sucks because I forgot how it feels like to be a layman now.
I
forgot what it's like to. Yeah, I forget what it's like to think like a layman. So now I just think like a magician. So. Oh, well.
Huh. Yeah, well, that's why you show the stuff to your mom and you show the stuff to your wife and your friends see what their perspective is. So that's great, man. Well, thanks so much for taking the time. Anything you want to promote?
No, thanks.
I mean, you got all the social media followers in the world. Our little podcast isn't going to help you much.
I think everyone just hope you guys stay safe and you guys stay sane during this kind of strange transitional time of our lives, I think. You know, it's a... I think it's, you know, it's really tough for a lot of people who don't have money or savings. It's really, really tough, and I really feel bad for them. But it'll be over, not soon. It'll be over in time. But I wish everyone the best of luck during this war. It is a war.
Yeah.
You know, it's a war against the virus.
Yeah,
know?
Totally.
Or the flu. It's a flu.
Yeah.
Whatever.
That's a great way of putting it. Yeah, that's great. Thanks, man. Thanks so much for listening to the show. Please give us 5 stars on the Apple Podcast. If you really like the show, you can donate a few bucks a month on our website, twomagiciansonemike.com, or become a monthly subscriber through our Patreon link. Thanks to all the people that support the show and keep it up and running. Be sure to follow us on the interwebs at twomagiciansonemike. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.